This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
So this is Stuart Harper, and I'm here with Dr. Michelle Collins from NPIA.
Hello.
And she's going to tell us a little bit about her talk today, hopefully, on dwarf galaxies around Andromeda. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So we've been looking at a lot of these dwarf spiral galaxies, which are the faintest galaxies that we can actually observe. So compared to the normal galaxies that you see in the Hubble Space Telescope images, they're very unimpressive. You really can't see that they're there above the background, but we can find them in wide field surveys. And we're very interested in following them up with spectroscopic instruments, so we can measure the individual stars and then the dynamics of the system. Because they're so low luminosity, we can really use the stars to trace the dark matter potential. And of course, dark matter is this big unknown in astronomy, so everybody really wants to study it in as much detail as possible, and these are great little tools for doing that because they're such small scale objects. So
perhaps you should explain a little bit about what a dwarf galaxy is. I mean, what sort of stars do you get in it? How many stars do you get?
Yeah,
so how many stars do you get compared to a normal galaxy? I mean, what makes it a dwarf in particular?
Compared to a normal galaxy, they're very, very faint, so very few number of stars. So typically in, say, the Milky Way, you have sort of 10 to the 10, 10 to the 11 stars in the galaxy. These galaxies can have as few as 100 stars. The light equivalent to 100 suns anyway within the systems, and typically the stars are very old as well. So it's anything from a few hundred stars to up to sort of 10 million stars is typically what we see in these objects. So much smaller, much less luminous than the Milky Way and Andromeda and other large spiral galaxies, and very old stellar populations. It's thought that they formed very early on in the universe and haven't really done much evolving since. Because they're so low mass, they can't accrete much gas to themselves, and they're not able to bring in the material they need to form stars. So they stopped evolving very early on, and now, in terms of their stellar components, they look much like they would have done very early on.
Do they form at the same time as the host galaxy, which they're orbiting?
So they form before, typically. So so the big galaxies we see, like the Milky Way and Andromeda, are actually built up from much smaller galaxies. So people often refer to dwarf galaxies as building blocks of large galaxies, although that's technically not correct, because we still see them today. So they're very much like what the building blocks would have been that made up galaxies like the Milky Way and Andromeda, but they've survived to the present day without being sort of mushed into larger galaxies.
So are we expecting them to at some point collide, or are they in like a safe orbit around the host?
So some of them are on orbits that won't decay, so they'll be orbiting their hosts for a long time yet, but some of them we actually see are in the process of being completely torn apart, and then others are sort of in between, so they're right now they're okay, but at some point they'll probably merge with their hosts. So for example, in the Milky Way we have a very famous example of a dwarf galaxy being eaten essentially by the Milky Way, and that's the Sagittarius dwarf, and it's actually spreading its stars into a huge tidal stream feature across most of the galactic sky. It's a very impressive. All of them eventually will end up right within the centre of their host halos and just be completely destroyed. But it'll take them different amounts of time to do that.
So going back to sort of what you're talking a little bit more on about. So you mentioned dark matter at the beginning. So how do these dwarf galaxies, what do they sort of tell us about dark matter?
Well, they let us really probe what's going on in the centre of the dark matter halos. So all galaxies are embedded, we think, in these very massive halos of dark matter. And typically they have much more mass in this dark matter than they do in the matter that we can see. And in dwarf galaxies in particular, they're even more concentrated in the amount of dark matter they have. And because they're very small objects, their stars sit right within the centre of this potential. And in the Milky Way, if you look right in the centre, there are so many stars, you can't neglect the stars and the gravity of the stars, for example. So you can't really get a handle on what the dark matter is doing. It's very difficult to separate it out from the stars that you're seeing. Whereas in these dwarf galaxies, the stars are essentially massless when you compare them to the dark matter. So their motions are entirely governed by the dark matter halo. And there are a lot of arguments between observers and theorists about exactly how the centre of a dark matter halo should look and the density profile as you go into the very centre. And this is very important because the simulations have so far been what's telling us the most about dark matter. And if the observers are beginning to think that the halos in the centre look very different, then that's leading to us having a problem with our general understanding of how galaxies form. With dwarf galaxies, we can really probe the central region and find out who's right in this argument. And that's what the end goal is, to see what dark matter is doing on very small scales.
Okay, so they're useful tools just because you can sort of look straight into the middle of them because they're not very dense with other stellar mass.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Is there a reason why dwarf galaxies have ended up with so much more dark matter in their centres? I mean, on their formation as opposed to...
So it's just that they're less able to form stars than some of the bigger galaxies because...
Okay.
So as the galaxy grows and gets more and more massive, obviously the gravity of the system is much greater. So it can pull in more galaxies to itself, and those galaxies will contain gas and stars. So it will bring in a stellar component, but it will also bring in the gas, which is the material used to make stars. The dwarf galaxies are much less massive. So they have much less pull. Because they're less massive, they're much less able to bring in other galaxies or even gas that's just lying around in the halos of other galaxies. So they can't continue forming stars. What we think happens is very, very early on, when galaxies are first forming, they had some gas and they were able to make go through one cycle of making stars. And then typically that produces a lot of material that you can then, it's from supernovae and stuff, you can then use that, reuse that material and make more stars and so on. But with these galaxies, the energy produced by these supernovae was sort of greater than the gravitational potential that they had, so they couldn't hold on to that gas. So they're just left over with some of the original population of stars that haven't yet gone supernova, and they haven't really been able to make much more since because they haven't been able to hold on to that material that they need to make stars. So it's just much less dense, whereas if you have a much more massive halo, you can keep doing this and then bring in more and more material, so you end up with a much denser population of stars.
Can the study of dwarf galaxies around Andromeda give us a clue to the sort of distribution of dark matter throughout the whole universe in general? I mean, can you extrapolate it to that, or...?
Yeah, so that's something that actually we're very interested in. So before we did our work on the Andromeda dwarf galaxies, really people had only looked at the dwarf galaxies of the Milky Way. And when we're using the motions of the stars to measure the masses of these halos, it seemed like they were all very, very similar masses within a given radius. So that was telling us maybe that all the dark matter halos that galaxies reside in initially are exactly the same. So if we understand then, say, one dark matter halo in detail, we can then say something about the original dark matter halos of all galaxies. And these will obviously change over time as galaxies interact, but it will give us sort of the original dark matter halo profile, which is something that we'd really want to know, because that's telling us about sort of the densities that dark matter clusters on and, you know, and forms galaxies on. But as you've only just done that with one system, you kind of have the problem that the Milky Way system could be unusual or unique, so we're not really learning about galaxies as systems as a whole, just our own galaxy. So we've been using Andromeda because it's one of the only other systems that we can do this with in detail. So to make these measurements of the stars that you need to make, you have to have something that's relatively close by. Otherwise, we just don't have the telescopes that are capable of doing it beyond sort of the distance of Andromeda. So we're really pushing it with these systems as it is. But we can then study in the same detail the systems that we're studying in the Milky Way and compare. And then we have, rather than just one point, we have two points of reference to see if both sets of galaxies look the same. And if they did, then we could say, well, maybe that's how all galaxies look. Mm. I mean, it's still a bit... We only have two, but it's better than having just one.
Yeah.
Definitely. So the idea was to compare the two populations and see if they're the same. And what we find is that, for the large part, they are. But in the Andromeda system, we have a few outliers. There are a couple of dwarf spheroidal galaxies in Andromeda where the central densities of their dark matter halos are lower, so they're less dense and less massive. And this is a bit troubling because we think there's a certain density limit for a dark matter halo. And if you go below that density limit, then you should never have been able to form stars in the first place, because you can't cool the gas enough in order to turn it into stars. So if you go below a certain threshold in central density, the dark matter halo should have remained dark. And the values that we measure for this density in three dwarf spheroidals in Andromeda is actually lower than this threshold. So if they had always looked that way, it would mean that the dark matter halos, that we shouldn't be able to see them at all now. They should have no stars at all. But clearly we do see them. So that's telling us there's either a problem in how we assume that stars form, and we use physics to try and explain that, so that we hope that's not the case. Mm. Or that something has happened to these galaxies that has lowered their central densities, so that now they look much less dense than they would have done when they first became galaxies. And we think it's probably the latter that is happening, and we think it's to do with the interactions of these galaxies and the host galaxies like Andromeda. Mm. So Andromeda obviously has a much larger mass than these galaxies. It has many more stars and much more dark matter overall. So the gravitational effects of that can remove some of the dark matter and stars from the galaxies that are orbiting it. And as such, that could lower the central densities of these dark matter halos. And I think that's what this data is telling us. And it's a very important effect, because there are a number of people, I think, that study dwarf spheroidal galaxies, and they make the assumption that they look exactly the same now as they did when they were first formed. And then they use the results that we're seeing now to say, this is how galaxies form overall, and this is what the first galaxies sort of look like, and to derive, you know, information about how stars are formed over time. Mm. And I think what these results are telling us is that we can't assume these galaxies look exactly the same as they did when they were first formed. And we need to understand the effect that their host galaxy is having on them better. And that's pretty much what we've been working on.
So does that mean there is sort of the stellar material from the dwarf galaxies are being stripped off? Or is it the dark matter as well? Or
and so it's everything.
It's changing everything.
So it tends to be that because the dark matter halos are much more massive, that the dark matter gets stripped off first and then the stars. But eventually the stars will get stripped out too.
So do you see stars actually moving between the galaxies then as well? Actually, can you see those? Is that possible? Is it?
It is for some objects, yes. So like the Sagittarius dwarf in our galaxy, we can see the stars being stripped off in our halo. So they're being smeared out across most of the galactic sky, which is pretty exciting. And then in Andromeda, there are a few cases where we can see very beautiful streams of stars as well being pulled up, sort of feeding into the host galaxy, into Andromeda, from many different directions. And in some cases, we can see the progenitor, so the dwarf galaxy that's being stripped, but in other cases, we can't. So it's a lot of people are hunting for those as well. It's harder to see them in Andromeda in general because they're very low surface brightness. So even though we have this very deep survey, the PANDAS survey, which is a large-scale photometric survey of the entire Andromeda system, it goes deep enough to resolve the very bright streams, but there are a lot that we wouldn't be able to detect, I think. So it's often hard to see the effects of stars being stripped out unless it's a very violent case, like the Sagittarius stream in our galaxy.
So what about the future? I mean, you said that you can only really do it on Andromeda on our own galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to be able to go to further galaxies? Is that even possible?
So there are actually a few telescopes that are being built over the next decade that should help us be able to push out further in distance. So there are these 30-metre telescopes that are being built. There's one being built by ESO, the extremely large telescope, and there are also a couple that will be built by the United States, and some other people are involved in those collaborations as well. These telescopes will allow us to push out much further in distance, so we can hopefully go out into the local universe, so rather than just the local group. We can go out to a few megaparsecs and study galaxies and their satellite distributions and properties. So that's hopefully, with those telescopes, we'll be able to push out further. But at the moment, we're just limited by the telescopes that we have.
Is there a time on that? I mean, how long do you think it'll be before you start getting those surveys coming in? Is it decades or...?
So I can't remember the exact when they're exactly building the instruments, but over the next decade,
decade.
I think the 30-metre telescope should be up. So I think by 2020, I think most of them are planned to be operational, but I won't guarantee that date.
You're not building them, so
but yeah, so I think it's supposed to be over the next decade that we're starting to see these 30-metre telescopes come online, hopefully. So.
Okay.
So that'll be a very exciting time for all of science, really.
Yeah, it'd be really good. Okay, well, I think we can leave it there.
That's
pretty much talked about everything. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And goodbye.
Bye.